Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. Wow, it feels like forever since our last story. Sorry this has taken so long. So much was happening in our lives that it just was difficult to get this story out. One big thing that happened was that Variant Frequencies won the Parsec Award for Best Magazine or Anthology Podcast. We were astounded that we won another Parsec Award. This is a great honor, and we want to thank all of the authors, voices, musicians, and artists who have contributed to Variant Frequencies. There is no way that we could have done it without you. We also want to thank you, the listeners. Without you, there would be no reason for Variant Frequencies. For September, we bring you another Amarant story by Anne Stringer. Our narrator is Mark Pearlstone. You previously heard Mark in The Destruction of Sennacherib by Bryn Sparks. Now, on to our story. All the Time by Anne Stringer. The watchmaker's shop is filled with timepieces of all kinds, from the majestic grandfather clock to the most delicate pocket watch. All the time in the world. But it's not the many clocks adorning the walls that give him eternity. Or is it?
The grandfather clock in the hall outside of my shop begins to chime. It's a lovely Victorian-style floor clock with a satin cherry finish. The dial is polished brass with a crystal-cut glass centre disc. The lyre pendulum is also polished brass. The back is mirrored and the case is lit by not just one, but two lamps. The base has frosted glass to soften the glow. The wood is sculpted and carved into intricate columns and designs. I explained all of this to a customer who was looking at the piece with some interest this afternoon, but the price made her hesitate. She needed to think it over. Next, a smaller clock on the wall begins to whir. The wood on this one is even more intricately carved. It seems a bit extravagant to me, but those Black Forest styles are always in demand. A bird pops out of a tiny door and cuckoos. A tiny carved man and woman appear below that and do a whirling dance across the face to the other door, which opens to admit them. I glance up at the mantel clock and see that it is 9 p.m. Yes, I have a fireplace in my shop. It adds to the ambience, the old-time feel of the place. My customers appreciate it. The mantel clock adds its own gong to the sound. This is yet another thing that the customers enjoy. Every hour the shop is filled with the chimes, bells, whistles, gongs and tinkling music of a variety of clocks announcing the time. I have them set so that the sound builds, first one clock, then another, building to a crescendo which gradually fades. I never tire of it. I have stayed in the shop somewhat later than I had planned today, though. It might be said that I've lost track of time. Out of habit, I reach into a vest pocket and take out a pocket watch. I handle it with great care and delicacy, as it's very old. Opening it, I see to my relief that it's still running, though it's off by a few minutes. I smile and adjust it. It doesn't have the workings of modern timepieces that assure extreme accuracy, but it's more precious to me than any other piece in the world. My father made this for me when I was his apprentice. He worked very hard, often long hours, so He must have created this during his free time, what little of it he had. This was at a time when watches were an indulgence of the very wealthy. It took a long time for masters to make one, and the materials were precious, so they were beyond the reach of everyone else. I will never forget when he presented it to me. Even at that tender age, I knew what a treasure that gift was. He chuckled as he must have seen the astonishment on my face. Then he admonished me quite seriously to take good care of my watch. "It will last a very long time if you treat it well," he told me. Then he smiled and chucked me under the chin. "Take good care of yourself as well, my son, and you'll live as long as the watch." And so I did. No mother bird ever handled her egg more delicately than I did that pocket watch. No dragon ever guarded its hoard so jealously. I didn't allow so much as a scratch to mar its golden case. I polished it gently with a jeweler's cloth and kept it in a pocket lest it suffer from extremes of temperature. I wound it with great care. When a year had passed, I had learned enough from father to take it apart, clean it, oil it, and put it back together under his watchful eye. I hardly dared breathe the entire time. And I cared for myself as well. My body, the temple of the Holy Spirit. I kept it immaculately clean. I did not partake in the vices of the day. I avoided liquor in all its forms, even wine. I eschewed opium. I did not fornicate, did not even glance at the prostitutes. And of course, I prayed. I prayed hard, long, and often. I could have been a priest. I caught Papa watching me sometimes with a puzzled look on his face, like he didn't understand me. How a son of his could be so serious. When I was a little older, he encouraged me to court a young lady, to make a family of my own. He wanted grandchildren while he still lived. He wanted to know that our name would go on and our skills would be taught to another generation. I put him off. He was still a young and hale man. There was plenty of time for grandchildren. The truth was, I didn't want to give up my purity. There was not as much time as I hoped. One horrible day, my father died. One moment he was seated at his work table, the inner workings of a lantern clock spread around him, and the next he was on the floor gasping like a fish. Though inexperienced in the ways of life, even I could see that he was in dire peril. His face was grey, and the expression upon it was one of agony and fear. I went immediately to his side, knelt, and took one of his hands in both of mine. "Papa," I cried, "where is your watch?" "My..." was all he could manage to whisper. "Your watch," I repeated. "Where is your watch? Quickly, I will fix it and all will be well." The look he gave me was stricken with more than the physical pain he felt. He tried to speak but could not. His hand gripped mine tightly and then went limp. His eyes went blank and his breathing stopped. In that moment, I realized the truth. How could I have been such a foolish child to believe that I could save my father by fixing his watch? Why had it taken his death for me to see? Why had I never realized this before? My father did not have a watch. As an apprentice went for a doctor, I turned my father's lifeless hand over, ran my fingers over his. How deft they had been in life. I had learned so much from him and was by then considered an expert in my craft. Yet I still felt like a bumbling oaf compared to him. I felt a deep pang of regret. How selfish I had been. Of course Papa didn't have a watch. Making mine had cost him dearly. He had nothing left for his. How I wish I had realized this sooner. I would have made him one myself. It would not have been as elegant and precise as the one he made for me, but perhaps it would have served. Now it was far too late. The guilt lives in me still. There is another terrible secret I keep, also related to my pocket watch. Naturally, I guarded it carefully. It had to be kept safe from the elements as well as protected from thieves. The thought of this precious piece stolen terrified me. I touched it frequently to assure myself that it was still there. Curved back, worn smooth by my fingers. Intricately carved front of the case, which I took care not to handle. Its familiar shape and weight had the ability to calm me. It was all I could do not to take it out constantly to check the movement. I forced myself to check it only once or twice each day. So it was, one day, as I wandered through the crowded borough market. It was a lively, colourful place, and it was the harvest time. There was so much to see, I was thoroughly enjoying my stroll. A group of ragged youngsters ran past, crashing into me as they went. A young man stopped and helped me steady myself, then went on his way. Once I had composed myself, my hand went to my pocket. The watch was gone. Wildly, I looked around me. The boys had melted into the crowd, but I was still able to see the young man. He glanced back at me, saw me starting toward him, and began to run. I gave chase. Through streets, between merchants, and into alleys he led me. I was, and am, no athlete. But desperation drove me on. And I knew these streets as well as he. He felt his own sort of desperation, of that I'm certain. Newgate inspired fear in everyone on the wrong side of the law. But my very life depended on that pocket watch. And he'd had a much more difficult life than I. I finally caught him in a narrow alleyway between buildings and bore him to the dirt. "My watch!" I gasped, realizing in a panic he might not actually have it. I searched blindly for pockets in his ragged clothing. "Get off!" he panted, Irish by his accent. He denied having my watch, or indeed anything of mine, and cursed me roundly in English and Gaelic. In the struggle, my clothing became as filthy as his. At last, I got my hands around his throat and squeezed. His eyes bugged out a bit. And with the little air he could manage, he said he would give it back if I would just release him, or words to that effect. I loosened my grip just enough for him to get a little air, and he brought forth my watch from within his rags. And then he tossed it somewhere behind me. "Go after it, you want it so much," he said. The sound that it made, the soft thud of it landing in the filth of that alley, filled me with rage. I did something I had never done before that moment, nor since. I clenched my fist and struck him in the face, then again and again. I blooded his nose and split his lip. He made feeble attempts to fight back, but my fury overpowered all reason. I pounded him until he ceased moving, and then I pounded more. Blood flowed from his nose and his mouth and mingled with the muck. When my blows grew weak, I stood and kicked him brutally. Finally, I returned to my senses. I fell to my hands and knees and searched for my watch in that dark alley, finding it by touch. I held it to my ear and held my breath. When I heard its familiar, comforting tick, I sobbed in sheer relief. Only then did I turn my attention back to the young thief. I touched him, shook him gently, and realized, to my horror, that he was dead. I had killed him. I stumbled from that alley, covered in filth, his blood on my hands. A whore saw me and started towards me, but then backed away into the shadows when she saw the state I was in. Somehow, I made my way home. I threw away the filthy clothing and washed up as best I could. Then I sat at my little table and looked at my watch by the light of a candle. The case had a few tiny scratches, but I could polish those away. Cleaned away the dirt and carefully opened it. To my enormous relief, the face was as pristine as ever. I would take it apart and give it a thorough cleaning early this year. Still, I could not sleep that night. With my own hands, I had killed the man. Furthermore, I had been seen. It was time to leave London or face Newgate myself. By then, I was convinced that the cities of America were sufficiently civilized, and I went to New York to set up my own shop. The less said about that voyage, the better. Never again will I set foot in a boat. I found a likely spot with an apartment above it, which is perfect for me. It's been a success, and I've been here ever since. I change the name every now and then. The name at present is All the Time, which I rather like. Though I have a great love for the old timepieces, I have not rejected technology. Some of the clocks and watches I sell are quite sophisticated. Over the long years, I've seen New York grow up around me. I've seen the horse and buggy give way to the automobile. It was always a busy, bustling place, and now it can be frightening. This building is my sanctuary. It took a long time to ease the pangs of guilt over the Irish lad. I tell myself it's been so long, he would be dead by now anyway. My pocket watch has prolonged my life to an extraordinary degree, but he had no such thing. He had no hope of ever escaping his miserable life of poverty and thievery in London. Had he been caught, he would have been imprisoned, hanged, or shipped off to Australia. Sometimes I even believe it. It's 9 p.m. The music of the chimes has faded. The shop is already closed and locked up. I adjust the time on my pocket watch, close the case, and head upstairs. Perhaps tomorrow the grandfather clock will sell. If not, then the next day. I have time.
The amaranth flower, sacred to the goddess Artemis, did not fade or wither, and so symbolized immortality. You have just heard All the Time, another tale of immortality, part of a collection by Anne Stringer and Matt Wallace. Listen for more stories of the amaranth in future episodes of Variant Frequencies. Thank you for listening to All the Time by Anne Stringer, narrated by Mark Pearlstone. The music for this story was provided by Digital Juice, and the sound effects came from SoundSnap. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Anne Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
It's a well-known fact that an author's first novel is semi-autobiographical, usually offering a rare insight and perspective into a world we only barely recognize as our own. Often these novels are coming-of-age stories, and it doesn't take too long for the reader to believe that the story they're reading is only a few shades away from memoir. Take, for example, the new novel by D.K. Thompson, a complicated tale that deals with identity crisis, failed heroes, the bonds of friendship, tormented double lives, male insecurity, and, well, superpowers.
The Unbelievable Origin of Super Spiff and the Toothpick Kid, a podcast novel about wannabe superheroes by D.K. Thompson.
And, like most semi-autobiographical novels, it is 99% true. Well, I say 99%. 95, 80, mostly true in a James Frey sort of way. This, make no mistake, is D.K. Thompson as you've never heard him before.
Wait a minute. Who's D.K. Thompson?
Who's D.K. Thompson? Me! I'm D.K. Thompson.
Oh, I thought your name was Dave.
Shh! That's my secret identity.
Of course, just as some people believe the devil has all the best music, or at the very least owns the back catalogues, other people believe that children have all the best stories. But truly great stories transcend age and genre, and drag readers of all ages into a world filled with heroism, adventure, and derring do. And there's plenty of daring to be done, believe you me.
Hey everyone, this is Dave Thompson, aka DK Thompson, the author. Drop on by my website, DaveShotFirst, at dk-thompson.com, where you can download my very first podcast novel, The Unbelievable Origin of Super Spiff and the Toothpick Kid. God, that's a mouthful. Discover the golden rule of comic books, the secret behind Wayne Enterprises, poser superheroes, and why lame special editions of comics cost so freaking much. Hope to see you there, and don't forget to bring your costumes.
Well-Told Tales presents, in eight-part audio blockbuster, the epic tale of a mild-mannered comic book fan who accidentally kills his favorite superhero, then must assume his identity to save the world.
Oh my God! I killed Awesome Man!
You must become the next Awesome Man.
Me? I don't have any superpowers.
He doesn't have any regular powers.
What the hell are you wearing?
It's my new alter ego, Commander Badass.
No way, dude. I can't take care of myself, let alone a sidekick.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Commander Badass is your partner, not a sidekick.
Four extremely powerful beings are approaching our world. Real-life horsemen of the apocalypse.
Wait, what?
Starring Norm Sherman of the Drabblecast. And featuring celebrity appearances by Mer Lafferty.
Who is that?
Seth Harwood.
Kick him in the nuts.
Matthew Wayne Selznick.
The aliens are closing in.
Rick Stringer.
Get him out of there.
Soupbone the Wonder Pimp.
He's about to be red, bled, and dead.
J.C. Hutchins.
Mommy.
And Stephen Ealy.
Sweet mother of God.
Available August 25th on WellToldTales.com and IKilledAwesomeMan.com.
In the absence of Sigler, in a world where the stories of Obsidian must come to an end, after the Crazy Eights, when the new day must dawn, one man will bring you podcast love, Junius Pons brings the heat this fall. Starting August 18th, Young Junius comes at you every week at SethHarwood.com. And if you want something else, there's also the Crime Wave stories, getting updated every Sunday at CrimeWave.com with the best of the short fiction in crime.
Hey everybody, this is Chris Lester from the Metamore City podcast at www.metamorecity.com. Over the last year, listeners like you have helped to take Metamore City from its quiet beginnings to become a real success, with a Podcast Peer Award for Best Production and two nominations in this year's Parsec Awards. Some of you have asked me how you can say thank you for the entertainment that the show has given you. Well, here's your chance. I've just started a new career as a biology teacher at Arise High School in Oakland, California. Arise is a charter school serving the high-need Fruitvale area, and this year we're badly short of funds for school supplies. We have a particularly urgent need for basic equipment for our biology classroom, including glassware, preserved specimens, and reagents for our lab experiments. We'd also like to be able to take the students on a canoe trip this fall with Save the Bay, a local nonprofit that educates people about environmental issues affecting the San Francisco Bay Area. If he can help, please go to arisebiology.chipin.com and leave a donation. That's A-R-I-S-E biology.chipin.com. Even if you can only give a few dollars, every little bit helps. Arise High School is a registered not-for-profit charitable organization, so all donations are tax-deductible. Thanks in advance for your help. Together, we can make sure that these students get the education they deserve.